After three rounds of speeches, Job's phony comforters had not proved their point. Neither had Job solved his problem. However, he was on the right road, and he seemed to be growing in faith. Our section tonight covers Job's last reply. Job's speech has three main themes. The first one is chapter 27. Job contrasts his integrity with the doom of the wicked. The next one in chapter 28, he praises the priceless quality of wisdom. And then in chapters 29 to 31, he speaks about himself. So after this section, a young punk named Elihu will give his best shot at Job. He will deliver a super long speech. You know, there are speakers like this. They go on forever. So this young man will go forever. He will cover six chapters in a row. Chapters 32 to 37. That will trigger God to break his silence. He won't be able to stand it anymore. He will not be able to take it, and he will start to ask some question, chapters 38 to 41. We are almost over with the book of Job. Tonight, chapter 27, remember there's no break between chapter 26 and 27. We could not take all of the speech of Job at one time. It's going to be difficult for us to take it from 27 to 31. So there was no break between 26 and 27. This chapter 27 deals with the continuation of Job's answer to Bildad. And Job will question God's justice. There's three short parts in this chapter here. First, the pledge, verses 1 to 6. Then the plea, verses 7 to 12, and finally the promise, verses 13 to 23. Moreover, Job continued his discourse and said, "As God lives, who has taken away my justice, and the Almighty, who has made my soul bitter, as long as my breath is in me, and the breath of God in my nostrils, my lips will not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Far be it from me that I should say you are right. Till I die, I will not put away my integrity from me. My righteousness I hold fast and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me as long as I live." So the opening words, "Moreover, Job continues his discourse," suggest that there was sort of a coffee break. Somehow there was a pause there, and then he furthermore continued. He is no longer simply answering Bildad like he did in chapter 26. This time he's addressing all of them together. He is getting many things off his chest, so to speak. So before addressing the predicament of the wicked that we see in verses 7 to 23, Job again affirmed his innocence to show that he was not one of the godless people. He said that as long as he lived, twice, verse 3 and verse 6, with God's breath in him, he will not speak wickedness, and he will not utter deceit. Verse 4. He simply could not accept his friend's viewpoint or deny his integrity in verse 5. Remember his integrity that his wife urged him to deny it. Just curse God and die. In chapter 2, verse 9. That's a good wife. Even with all his friends badgering him, he was confident that he would retain his righteousness and that his conscience would not reproach him. He says here in verse 6, he refused to admit that his critics might be right in verse 5 in accusing him of suffering as a result of some secret sin. He was not going to agree with this, with his critics. So that's the first part, and that is the pledge. Then verse 7, we have the second part now, that's the plea. May my enemy be like the wicked, and he who rises up against me like the unrighteous. For what is the hope of the hypocrite? Though he may gain much, if God takes away his life, will God hear his cry when trouble comes upon him? Will he delight himself in the Almighty? Will he answer? Will he always call on God? I will teach you about the hand of God. What is with the Almighty, I will not conceal. Surely all of you have seen it. Why then do you behave with complete nonsense? So Job did not defend the wicked, the unrighteous, or the hypocrite. In his opinion, their misfortune is well deserved. He asked 5 questions here that pointed to the hopeless condition of the wicked. The first one is, what is his hope if God takes his life? Will God hear his cry when troubles come? Will he delight himself in the Almighty? Number 4, will he always call on God? And number 5, why then do you behave with complete nonsense? His problem is that the wicked only prays to God when he is in distress. Verse 10. So God does not answer him in verse 9. So if you don't want answers to your prayer, never pray to God when everything is well, and only run to him when you're in distress and be a complete stranger to God, and then don't expect any answer. He hardly knows you. You spend no time with him. You're not friends. So that's what he says here. The wicked only prays to God when he's in distress. So God does not answer him. Verse 9. Will God hear his cry? The answer is no. So in contrast with the wicked, Job said he could instruct his friends about God's ways in verse 11. Since they had seen evidences of God's works, they were wrong to continue their false and empty accusations, claiming that God was punishing an innocent person. Then the next section, verses 13 to 23, is the promise. So this is the promise of Job for the wicked. So Job had already spoken of the fate of the wicked in chapter 24, verse 18 to 24. He never denied the ultimate punishment of God's enemy, but he did deny their immediate judgment, contrary to Zophar's claim earlier in chapter 20, verse 5, and again chapter 21, verse 7. So if Zophar could speak of the fate of the wicked and their legacy, so could Job. So Job promised that the family members of a vile person are subject to death by warfare. Verse 14, death by the sword. They are subject to starvation or the plague. In verse 15, he says his survivors will die and will be buried, and their widows won't even weep. That's what they call the black widow. They don't weep. He says in verse 16, he will lose his possessions, even though he may be filthy rich with vast amount of silver and many clothes. In verse 17, they will pass into the hands of others. His house will be as empty as a deserted cocoon, as unstable as a temporary shelter made by a farmer for guarding his crop. In verse 18, his wealth will be gone suddenly. In verse 19, and will quickly be carried off by a storm the strong Scirocco east wind, verse 21. And men will make fun of him, verse 23, the expression there, clap their hands and hiss, is an expression to make fun of people while he tries desperately to escape from the merciless power of that wind in verse 22. So Job mentioned the end result of the life of the wicked in this section. The promises are to the wicked. It is destruction and misery. He may be prosperous for a little time, but eventually he will be destroyed, and he will be miserable, and he will be tormented day and night. So just because does not show his displeasure by reducing them to poverty right away, or afflicting them right away, it does not mean that he approves. He gives them space to repent, and if they do not, then he reserves their judgment for another world. So a wicked person may be doing great, having fun, money, houses, everything, and nothing seemed to happen to them in this life. Don't be confused. It does not mean that God is blind, or he doesn't see, he doesn't know, or he approve. They are not getting away with their wickedness. He'll get them in the other world. God has all the time in the world. So the main lesson from this chapter 27 is seeing the miserable condition of the hypocrite here should encourage us to be upright. This is, we see the promise, what they will have. Verses 13 to 23, and that should be an encouragement to us to live righteously. Chapter 28, again, there's no break between 27 and 28. This one deals with a continuation of Job's answer, and then the value of divine wisdom. Job seeked God's wisdom. In this chapter 28, Job confirmed people's inability to discover God's wisdom, in contrast with the three friends who claimed that they knew exactly what God was doing in Job's life. So there's two simple parts to chapter 28, the source of wealth, verses 1 to 11, and the source of wisdom, verses 12 to 28. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken from the earth, and copper is smelted from ore. Man puts an end to darkness and searches every recess for one in the darkness and the shadow of death. He breaks open a shaft away from people in places forgotten by feet. They hang far away from men. They swing to and fro. As for the earth, from it comes bread, but underneath it is stirred up as by fire. Its stones are the source of sapphires, and it contains gold dust. That path no bird knows, nor has the falcon's eye seen it. The proud lions have not trodden it, nor has the fierce lion passed over it. He puts his hand on the flint. He overturns the mountain at the roots. He cuts out channels in the rocks, and his eye sees every precious thing. He dams up the streams from trickling. What is hidden, he brings forth to light. So men search for several metals underground: gold, silver, iron, copper, verses 1 and 2. And precious gems, such as sapphires, he says in verse 6. Miners dig shafts in the underground darkness. They dangle from ropes. They reach remote areas in verse 4. Underneath, the earth is overturned by miners at work and in rubbles as if It had been burned, he says in verse 5. Burned birds even with keen sight, verse 7. And lions, in verse 8. They cannot see or walk on the underground treasures. In his mining operations, man hammers away at the rocks, verse 9. Digs tunnel under the ground, verse 10. And even finds where rivers begin. But he is able to bring hidden things to light, it says in verse 11. But at verse 12, not only now do we have the source of wealth, it's coming from under the ground, but now we have the source of wisdom. So in verses 12 to 19, Job mentioned that wisdom is far more valuable than precious metals or precious stones. But where can it be found? He asked in verse 12. It cannot simply be discovered by people, and it cannot be brought for a price. In spite of men's theological skills, he cannot find the greatest treasure of all, wisdom. Its value is not fully known by men. Men can discover many other hidden treasures under the earth's surface, but he cannot discover wisdom, verse 13 says, in the land of the living. And verse 14 says, or in any ocean. Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. And the sea says, it is not with me. It cannot be found there. Nor can wisdom be purchased in a market with other precious metal, verse 15, or traded for jewelry or jewels that men can uncover, like gold, silver, onyx, sapphire, crystal, coral, jasper, rubies, or topaz, listed in verses 16 to 19. So why not? Because wisdom far exceed the value of any of those jewels, any of those precious metal. Verse 20, from where then does wisdom come? And where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Destruction and death say, we have heard a report about it with our ears. God understands its way, and he knows its place. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heaven to establish a weight for the wind and mete out the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt, the lightning, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it, indeed, he searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. So Job asked, where does wisdom come from? Wisdom and understanding are hidden from the eyes of all living creatures, verse 21. Destruction and death have only heard about wisdom, in verse 22. The same God who designed the pattern of nature, in verses 25 and 26 here, the wind and the water and all these things, he is the source of wisdom. So God who designed nature, he is the source of wisdom. He knows its place, verse 23. He declares it, he prepares it, he searched it out, verse 27. So God knows where to find wisdom. And he tells us in verse 28, the fear of the Lord is true wisdom. To depart from understanding, depart from evil is understanding. So that's what he says in verse 28. So the main lesson of this chapter 28, The more we know God, the more wisdom we will have. And we will surely be guided in all our ways. So that's why we're here on Sunday night. That's why we study the Bible cover to cover. One end of the Bible to the other end. We want to know God. The more we will know God, the more wisdom we will have. People are going to think you're very smart. You got a lot of wisdom. And it comes from the Word. A lot of people don't have it because they're not interested in the Word. Too bad. Chapter 29. Again, no break between 28 and 29. Job is on the... He's going. 29 deal with the continuation of Job's answer. And then now he's going to start the story of his life. So Job looked back at the joys of his life. There's three parts to this chapter 29. Past fellowship with God, verses 1 to 6. Past respect from others, verses 7 to 11. Past ministry to others, verses 12 to 25. So Job further continued his discourse and he said, "Oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness, just as I was in the days of my prime, when the friendly counsel of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were around me, when my steps were bathed with cream, and the rock poured out rivers of oil for me." So obviously the condition of Job extended over several months. In previous months, God had watched over him, Job felt, and God had blessed him, verses 2 and 3. His former enjoyment of fellowship with God is the first thing that Job mentioned. He had something with God. Now, to have God's lamp over his head in verse 3 is like having a lamp suspended in the tent, and it means to have been, to be under God's favor. His lamp is over me. So God guided him through the darkness and through the difficulties, and he befriended him, and God was with him. So Job had a happy home. His children were around him in verse 5, in contrast with their being dead now. And he was prosperous in verse 6. Cream and oil were symbols of prosperity. So he said that he bathed with cream, and the rock gave him rivers of oil. So that was prosperity. So that's the first part, past fellowship with God. Then at verse 7, start the second part, the past respect that he had from others. "When I went out to the gate by the city, when I took my seat in the open square, the young men saw me and hid, and the aged also and stood. The princes refrained from talking and put their hand on their mouth. The voice of nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to the roof of their mouth. When the ear heard, then it blessed me, and when the eye saw, then it approved me." So the suffering man here remembers the good old days. He enjoyed social prestige as a judge sitting at the city gate in verse 7. He was respected not only by those younger than him, but contrary to normal custom, he was respected also by older people in verse 8. The silence of his elders at the city gate in verse 9, where they waited for his words of wisdom, was missing from his three friends. Others had put their hands on their mouth, that is, to signal silence. But not these three guys who were with him. Job was well spoken of in verse 11. He was not slandered. He was not criticized like his present company was doing to him. In verses 12 to 25, we have the third part, the past ministry to others. Why was Job so highly respected? In verses 7 to 11, because of one thing, his past ministry to others. It says that he helped the needy, verses 12 and 13, including the poor, the orphans, the dying, the bereaved widows, contrary to Eliphaz's charges in chapter 22, that he was neglecting those things. Also, he administered justice, verses 14 to 16, defending the cause of and assisting the blind, the lame, the needy, the stranger. He was a good man. He overturned their oppressors, breaking the fangs of the wicked. He says in verse 17, I broke the fangs, that's the jaws of the wicked, and plucked the victim from his teeth. Job had expected God's blessing to continue with a long life. Verse 18, multiplying my days like the sand. For God to bless him with stability in verse 19. Root spreading out, that stability. God blessing him with prosperity in verse 19. Dew on my branch, that is prosperity. Also with an honorable reputation, my glory is fresh, he says in verse 20. And also with strength in verse 20, my bow is renewed. So besides being blessed, verses 2 to 6, besides helping others, verses 7 to 17, and expecting his health and strength to continue, verses 18 to 20, Job's counsel was welcomed. He says in verse 21, men listened to me and waited, and they kept silence for my counsel. So his counsel was welcomed by people, contrary to the attitude of the three uninvited guests in his house. People eagerly welcomed his opinion like the soil drinking in the spring rain. In verse 23, they waited for me as for the rain. And if he would mock, verse 24, they did not believe it. Job's counselors took his advice. I chose the way for them, he says in verse 25. And I sat as chief. They respected him as if he were a chief or a king, verse 25. So some people really believe that Job was actually King Jobab, found in Genesis 36, verse 33, an Edomite king. Job also comforted those who grieved, and another area in which his miserable counselor failed. They were not good at helping him who was grieving. So those were the old days, Job says here in chapter 29. So the main lesson of this chapter is a gracious soul delights in God's smiles, not the smiles of the world. Today, people delight in the smile from the world, the smile from people. They do not delight in God's smiles. Those who are not only good, but do good, are worthy of double honor. Now, chapter 30, again, there is no break between chapter 29 and chapter 30. This is just one long speech. This chapter deals with the continuation of Job's answer and the review of his present condition. Job looked around at God's judgment. Previous chapter, he looked back. Now he looked around. And in the next chapter, you will see he's going to look somewhere else. I got a note here. Chapter 29 speaks of what the Lord gave to Job. Chapter 30 speaks of what the Lord took away from Job. The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. There's four parts to this chapter 30. The first one is no respect. I believe that's where Rodney Dangerfield got his thing, no respect. Verses 1 to 15. Then no rest, verses 16 to 19. Then no answer, verses 20 to 23. And no help, verses 24 to 31. So let's start with the lack of respect. But now they mock at me, men younger than I, whose fathers I disdain to put with the dogs of my flock. Indeed, what profit is the strength of their hands to me? Their vigor has perished. They are gaunt. I mean that they thin, they're lean from want and famine, fleeing late to the wilderness, desolate and waste. Who pluck mallow by the bushes. That's a plant with a sour taste. And broom tree roots for their food. That's also bitter. They were driven out from among men. They shouted at them as at a thief. They had to live in the clefts of the valleys, in caves of the earth and the rocks. Among the bushes they brayed, they cried. Under the nettles, the shrub, they nestled. They were sons of fools. Yes, sons of vile men. They were scourged from the land. So contrary to the good old days, now Job was scorned by young people. In verse 1, whose father were outcasts of society. They were not, and according to Job, they were not even fitted to help Job's dogs with the sheep. They were worn out, verse 2, weak and poor, verse 3. So hungry that they fed on desert shrubs, verse 4. They were driven out from among men, in verse 5. Homeless nomads, verse 6. Driven from the land, verse 8. Now in verse 9 to 15, these scum of humanity treated Job with utter contempt. Notice the description of their scorn. A taunting song in verse 9. I am their byword, he said also in verse 9. They abhor me, he says in verse 10. They spit in my face, verse 10. You talk about no respect. And because God had afflicted him, in verse 11, the youth push away my feet. They trip him, in verse 12. They break up or they block my path, he says in verse 13. And Job's honor and prosperity had totally vanished, verse 15. Terror are turned upon me. They pursue my honor as the wind. And my prosperity has passed like a cloud. So, indeed, no respect. Verse 16, now we have the second part, no rest. And now my soul is poured out because of my plight, my situation. The days of affliction take hold of me. My bones are pierced in me at night, and my gnawing pains take no rest. By great force, my garments is disfigured. It binds me about as the collar of my coat. He, God, has cast me into the mud, and I have become like dust and ashes. So here Job spoke of his physical agony. He was tortured with pains without rest, verses 16 and 17. He was disfigured with agony in verse 18. He was reduced to dust and ashes. He was ready to die, he says in verse 19. He was really in bad shape. Verse 20, now we have the third part, no answer. I cry out to you, capital Y, that's God, but you do not answer me. I stand up and you regard me, but you have become cruel to me. With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. That's quite a ride. You spoil my success, for I know that you will bring me to death and to the house appointed for all living. That is Sheol. So here we have in verse 20, added to his social rejection of verses 1 to 15, and his physical pain, verses 16 to 19, was his feeling of being neglected by God in verses 20 to 23. Not only was he suffering terribly, but he was crying out to God, and God was not answering his prayer in verse 20. And he felt that God was cruelly opposing him, verse 21. That God was taking away his success in verse 22. And that God was tossing him around and he was about to kill him, verse 23. That was only his opinion. It is not true. It felt like this to him, but God does not cruelly oppose anyone. And he is not that vicious. And then in verses 24 to 31, the last part, not only he had no respect, had no rest, had no answer, he had no help. Surely God would not afflict those who cry out to him, he says in verse 24. So he should not afflict one who was praying to him when he thought he was dying. Job had shown mercy to others, he says in verse 25. Have I not wept for him who was in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? But he was shown no mercy, he says in verse 26. Even after crying out for help in the congregation, verse 28, he was looking for good, but evil came to him. Imagine that. I stand up in the congregation and I cry out for help. But I am a brother of wild dogs and a companion of ostriches. Then he says in verse 30, my skin grows black and falls from me. That's a terrible condition the man was. My bones burn with fever. My harp is tuned to mourning and my flute to the voice of those who weep. He was in bad shape. In one of his books, Mark Twain talked about the difference between a dog and a man. And he said, if you pick up a starving dog and make him prosperous, he will not bite you. But man, that's another story. So Job's intense suffering was compounded by loneliness and by rejection. His skin was growing black and falling from him. Verse 30, his bones were burning. That's the pain, you know, when it comes from inside. His flute or his harp played only mourning music in verse 31. And he became a brother of jackal, a companion of ostriches. Some people say it was an owl, whatever. Verse 29. So the main lesson of this chapter 30 is the best of saints often receive the worst of shame from a spiteful and scornful world. And we should not consider it strange, the Bible says. Our own master was abused, so will we. Finally, the last one for tonight, chapter 31. Again, no break between chapter 30 and 31. This one deals again with a continuation of Job's answer and his insistence of his integrity. This chapter is Job's vow of innocence. Job looked ahead for God justice. Remember I said Job looked different places. He looked back. He looked around. Here he looked ahead. Can be divided into three parts. Three different types of sin in this chapter 31. First section, verses 1 to 12, are sensual sins. Lust, deceit, adultery. Verses 13 to 23, we see unethical sins, cruelty, abuse of power, abuse of authority. And then number 3, verses 24 to 40, moral sins, idolatry, denying God, hypocrisy. So let's start with the sensual sins. Here we see Job as a plain man. He says here, I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? He would not even look. For what is the allotment of God from above and the inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is it not destruction for the wicked and disaster for the workers of iniquity? Does he not see my ways and count all my steps? If I have walked with falsehood, with deceit, or if my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in a just balance that God may know my integrity. If my steps has turned from the way, or my heart walked after my eyes, or if any spot adheres to my hands, then let me sow and another man eat. Yes, let my harvest be rooted out. If my heart has been enticed by a woman, or if I have hid at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind or prepare food for another, and let others bow down over her. For that would be wickedness. Yes, it would be iniquity worthy of judgment. For that would be a fire that consumes to destruction and would root out all my increase. So Job insisted that he had not been guilty of lustful looks at a young woman in verse 1. He knew that God sees everything and God punishes such sin in verse 4. He had not acted deceitfully in verse 5. An honest examination would convince God of this, he says in verse 6. He had not strayed from the way of righteousness in verse 7. Otherwise, he would deserve to lose his harvest, he says in verse 8. He had not coveted his neighbor's wife in verse 9. Otherwise, his own wife should become another man in verse 10. And he should be judged, verse 11. And all his possession should be destroyed, he says in verse 12. So that's the first part, the sensual sin. Now at verse 13, second part, the unethical sins. Here we see Job as an employer. In this section, Job affirmed his fair treatment of his servants in verse 13. He treated them well. Had he been unjust with them, then he would be unable to face God, he says in verse 14. What then shall I do when God rise up? When he punishes, how shall I answer him? Job had been merciful to his servants. He had been charitable to the poor, he says in verse 16. He had been good to the widows and to the fatherless in verse 17. He was not selfish. He shared his food with orphans, and he even took them in under his own roof. He gave clothing and fleece to those who lacked it, verse 19. And then even if they were unappreciative in verse 20, he gave to the people. He was not looking for pat on the back or a big thank you. He was unusually considerate of the needy, for he feared God's punishment. And someone who feared God's punishment will do all kinds of things like this. He knew that his money and his rank would not prevent judgment from God. He says in verse 23, "For destruction from God is a terror to me, and because of his magnificence, I could not endure." And then at verse 24, we have now the third part, moral sins. We see Job here as a neighbor. First, we see him as a man, we see him as an employer, now we see him as a neighbor. He says in verse 24, "If I have made gold my hope," that's idolatry, "or said to find gold, you are my confidence. If I have rejoiced because my wealth was great, and because my hand had gained much, if I have observed the sun when it shines," it's another form of idolatry, "or the moon moving in brightness, so that my heart has been secretly enticed, and my mouth has kissed my hand," that's worship of self, "this also would be an iniquity worthy of judgment, for I would have denied God who is above." So materialism and idolatry were two other sins that Job denounced here in verse 24. Eliphaz earlier in chapter 22 had implied that Job was trusting in his riches, but he never did. He was not proud of his wealth, he says in verse 25. His heart was not inclined to worship the sky luminaries, verse 26 and 27, are people who worship the sky, a common practice in the ancient East. Such worship of creation would be punished by God who is above, he says in verse 28. Then in verses 29 to 34, Job said that he was not guilty of other sins, like being glad over the trouble of an enemy, in verse 29, or calling on God to curse an enemy, in verse 30. People in his family and his workmen always had plenty to eat, he says in verse 31. Even travelers enjoyed his hospitality, in verse 32. He did not hide his sin as men do, he says in verse 33, "as Adam did. If I have covered my transgression as Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, because I feared a great multitude and dreaded the contempt of family, so that I kept silence and did not go out of the door." So had he been hypocritical, the public would have found it sooner or later, and they would have scorned him, he says in verse 34. Then verse 35, "Oh, that I had one to hear me. Here is my mark. Oh, that the Almighty would answer me, that my prosecutor had written a book. Surely I would carry it on my shoulder," that's a big book, "and bind it on me like a crown. I would declare to him," God, "the number of my steps. Like a prince, I would approach him. If my land cries out against me and its furrows weep together, if I have eaten its fruit without money or caused its owner to lose their lives, then let thistles grow instead of wheat and weeds grow instead of barley." The words of Job are ended. So Job longed for someone to hear him, for his committee of accusers was not really listening to him. They were there, they were in his house, they were talking, they were saying all kind of stuff, but they were not listening to Job. So like a defendant in court, Job sign, that's figuratively, his statement of defense, ready for God to answer him. And he called God this prosecutor in verse 35. Had not Elihu started his six long chapters, God would have spoken right here. Job had not mistreated his employees. He denied any fraud of or any injustice. Hired farmers had not been overworked in the field. They had not either been underpaid. His land would cry out against him. Had he done that, he says in verse 38, with his oath of innocence, in which Job denied a dozen sins or of action or attitude, he rested his case. If Job were innocent, then God would be required, according to legal practice, to speak up and state it. So he was trying to get God to speak. If Job were guilty, then God would be expected to render the verdict on him. He will in a few chapters down. But either way, God would have to speak and say something. But God still remained silent. The sovereign God cannot be pushed into a corner. The sovereign God cannot be pressured into action by anyone's demand. So the main lesson of this chapter 31, an upright heart does not fear any scrutiny. A good man is willing to know the worst of himself and will be thankful to those who will faithfully tell him his fault. So, quite a text. We see a few vital things in this section tonight. We see one about righteousness and we see one about wisdom. First one, righteousness is a man's true treasure, and he should hold fast to it at any cost and never let it go. Never let go of your righteousness. It is a great treasure. It is not the wealth that a man has, nor the honor or the greatness that he attains, or the success that he has in business that makes him truly rich, but the Christ-like character that he builds up. And Jesus confirmed that when he was on the earth. And the second one about wisdom, we cannot buy wisdom. We cannot mine wisdom in the ground. No miner can uncover a vein of wisdom. All the wealth of the world will not buy wisdom. It only comes from one place, only comes from God. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So a person living in sin does not have wisdom, nor understanding. A man living in sin loses these two very important things, two treasures, I would say, righteousness and wisdom, two treasures. The fear of the Lord is not in the heart of a person who lives in sin. William Cowper said, knowledge is proud that he has learned so much. Wisdom is humble that he knows no more. Next week, the story continues. A young man was just sitting there and listening to these chapters of Job. His name was Elihu. Because the three friends did not answer anything to Job, he got mad. And he will respond. And he's quite a kick to listen to that young guy. He is going to go all over the place. His speech is very long, six chapters. And after that, God will have enough and he will speak. So you read chapters 32 to 35 for next week. One thing that Job said tonight in his long discourse is that just because God does not punish the people right away. It does not mean that God agrees with what the person is doing. Many people are deceived about this. They sin, they do something wrong, and God is not doing anything. So therefore, God is in agreement, or God is in the dark, he does not see, he does not know, or God does not care. And the people continue to sin, and they go deeper and deeper. But God sees everything. God is making notes. And the man will not get away with it. He may get away for 45 years, but he will not get away with it. Sooner or later, he will have a face-to-face talk with God, and he will have to pay for what he's done. Just because nothing is happening to you, you don't get busted, you are doing well, you think that, oh, God does not really mind if I do that, wrong. That's a big mistake that many sinners have made over years. God is not consenting, God is not agreeing, he does care, he knows what you're doing. The time will come, he's got the time, he knows when it's going to happen, and that will happen. So don't be fooled, like Job said, that, hey, these guys are getting away with murder as if God does not care. He does care, and nobody gets away with anything. So may the Lord be with you. May the Lord bless each and every one of you. May he bless your home, bless your work tomorrow, bless your family. May he help you to walk godly in Christ Jesus all the days of your life. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.